Chapter 13, Warnings and Reproofs.
Dear Brother O, I was shown that you were enshrouded in darkness, which was not relieved by rays of light from Jesus. You did not seem sensible of your danger, but were in a state of listless indifference, unfeeling and unconcerned. I inquired the cause of this much to be dreaded condition, and was pointed back for years and shown that you had not, since you embraced the truth, been sanctified through it. You have gratified your appetite and your lustful passions to the destruction of your own spirituality. I was shown that God had given light through the gifts placed in the church, which would instruct, counsel, guide, reprove, and warn. These testimonies, which you have professed to believe were from God, you have not regarded to live them out. To disregard light is to reject it. The rejection of light leaves men captives, bound about by chains of darkness and unbelief. I was shown that you have increased your family without realizing the responsibility you were bringing upon yourself. It has been impossible for you to do justice to your companion or to your children. Your first wife ought not to have died, but you brought upon her cares and burdens, which ended in the sacrifice of her life. Your present wife has a hard lot. Her vitality is nearly exhausted. By increasing your family so rapidly, you have been kept in a state of poverty, and the mother, engaged in rearing the young members of the family, has not had a fair chance for her life. She has nursed her children under the most unfavorable circumstances, when heated over the cook stove. She could not instruct them as she should, nor regulate their habits of eating and working. The result of eating food not the most healthful, and otherwise violating the laws which God has established in our being, has brought disease and premature death upon your elder children. Disease has been transmitted to your offspring, and the free use of flesh meats has increased the difficulty. The eating of pork has aroused and strengthened a most deadly humor which was in the system. Your offspring are robbed of vitality before they are born. You have not added to virtue knowledge, and your children have not been taught how to preserve themselves in the best condition of health. Never should one morsel of swine's flesh be placed upon your table. Your children have come up instead of being brought up and educated to the end that they might become Christians. In many respects, your cattle have received better treatment than your children. You have not done your duty to your children, but have left them to grow up in ignorance. You have not realized the responsibility you took upon yourself in bringing into the world so numerous a flock, that you were in a great measure accountable for their salvation. You cannot throw off this responsibility. You have robbed your children of their rights by not interesting yourself in their education and instructing them patiently and faithfully in regard to forming characters for heaven. Your course has done much to destroy their confidence in you. You are exacting, overbearing, tyrannical. You fret and scold and censure, and by so doing, wean their affections from you. You treat them as though they had no just rights, as though they were machines to turn in your hands according to your pleasure. You provoke them to wrath, and often discourage them. You do not give them love and affection. Love begets love. Affection begets affection. The spirit which you manifest toward your children will be reflected upon you. You are in a critical condition, and have no true sense of it. It is impossible for an intemperate man to be a patient man. First temperance, then patience. You have so long lived for self and followed the imagination of your own heart that you cannot discern sacred things. Your lustful appetite and passions have controlled you. The higher order of mental organs has been weakened and controlled by the lower, baser organs. The animal propensities have been gaining strength. When reason is left to be controlled by appetite, the high sense of sacred things is impaired. The mind is debased, the affections are unsanctified, and the words and acts testify what is in the heart. God has been displeased and dishonored by your conversation and your deportment. Your words have not been select and well chosen. Low, vulgar conversation comes naturally to your lips, even in the presence of children and youth. Your influence in this respect has been bad. Your example has not been right, and you have stood directly in the way of your children and the children of Sabbath keepers seeking the Lord. Your course in this respect cannot be too severely censured. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Your heart needs to be purified, cleansed, sanctified through obedience to the truth. Nothing can save you but a thorough conversion, a true sense of your sinful ways, and a thorough transformation by the renewing of your mind. You have been very zealous to plead the necessity of not denying our faith by our works, and have made your faith an excuse for not granting your children an opportunity to obtain an education in even the common branches. Knowledge in regard to yourself is what you need, and you will yet have to see the necessity of obtaining it. Knowledge is what your children need, but do not have the privilege of obtaining. With this great lack, they cannot become useful members of society, and they will be deficient in their religious education. A weighty responsibility rests at your door. You are shortening the life of your wife. How can she glorify God in her body and spirit, which are His? God has given you light and knowledge, which you have professed to believe came direct from Him, instructing you to deny appetite. You know that the use of swine's flesh is contrary to His express command, given not because He wished to especially show His authority, but because it would be injurious to those who should eat it. Its use would cause the blood to become impure, so that scrofula and other humors would corrupt the system, and the whole organism would suffer. Especially would the fine, sensitive nerves of the brain become enfeebled and so beclouded that sacred things would not be discerned, but be placed upon the low level with common things. Light showing that disease is caused by using this gross article of food has come just as soon as God's people could bear it. Have you heeded the light? You have gone directly contrary to the light which God has been pleased to give you in regard to the use of tobacco. The gratification of appetite has eclipsed the light given of heaven, and you have made a god of this hurtful indulgence. It is your idol. You have bowed to this instead of God, at the same time professing great faith in the visions, but acting entirely contrary to them. For years you have not advanced one step in the divine life, but have been growing weaker and weaker, darker and darker. You have felt sadly afflicted over the course of Brother P. in opposing the truth as he has done. You have ascribed the weak, discouraged state of the church to his opposition. It is true that he has been a great hindrance to the advancement of the cause of God in blank, but the course you have pursued, while professing to know the truth and to have an experience in the cause of God, has been a greater hindrance than his course. If you had stood in the counsel of God and been sanctified through the truth which you profess to believe, Brother P. would not have had all the doubts he has had. Your position as a defender of the visions has been a stumbling block to those who were unbelieving. I was shown that your brother tried to stand up under the heavy burdens which the sad condition of the church brought upon him until he nearly fell under the weight he was bearing and left for his life. I saw that God's care was over Brother and Sister R., and if their faith remained unwavering, they would yet see the salvation of God in their own house and in the church. I was shown the case of dear Brother and Sister S. They had been passing through the dark waters, and the billows had nearly gone over their heads. Yet God loved them, and if they would only trust their ways to Him, He would bring them forth from the furnace of affliction purified. Brother S. has looked upon the dark side and doubted whether he was a child of God, doubted his salvation. I saw that he should not labor too hard to believe, but should trust in God as a child would confide in its parents. He worries too much. He worries himself out of the arms of Jesus and gives the enemy a chance to tempt and annoy him. God knows the feebleness of the body and of the mind and will require no more of him than he will give him strength to perform. He has tried to be faithful and true to his profession. He has failed in his life and in a number of things, all ignorantly. In regard to the discipline of his children, he has considered it his duty to be strict and has carried this discipline too far. He has treated small offenses with too great severity. This has had an influence to wean, in a degree, the affection of the son from the father. During his sickness, Brother S. has had a diseased imagination. His nervous system has been all deranged, and he has thought that his children did not feel for him and love him as they should. But this was the result of disease. Satan wished to destroy him and dishearten and discourage his poor children. But God has not laid this to his charge. His children have greater burdens to bear than many that are older than they, and they deserve careful discipline, judicious training, mingled with sympathy, love, and great tenderness. The mother has had especial strength and wisdom from God to encourage and help her husband, and to do much in binding her children to her heart and strengthening their affection for their parents and for one another. I saw that angels of mercy were hovering over this family, although prospects looked so dark and foreboding. Those who have had bowels of compassion for Brother S. will never have cause to regret it, for he is a child of God, beloved of him. The depressed state of the church has been very detrimental to his health. I saw him looking on the dark side, distrustful of himself, and looking down into the grave. He must not dwell on these things, but look to Jesus, a pattern that is unerring. He must encourage cheerfulness and courage in the Lord. Talk faith, talk hope, rest in God, and not feel that a severe, taxing effort is required on his part. All that God requires is simple trust, to drop into his arms with all his weakness and brokenness and imperfection, and Jesus will help the helpless and strengthen and build up those who feel that they are very weakness itself. God will be glorified in his affliction through the patience, faith, and submission exemplified by him. Oh, this will prove the power of the truth we profess. It is consolation when we need it. It is support when every prop of an earthly nature, which has been a measurable support, is removed. I was also shown the case of Brother T. He has placed himself in a condition of bondage to which God did not call him. God is not pleased when aged fathers give their stewardship into the hands of unconsecrated children, even though these profess the truth. But when the means which the Lord has entrusted to his people is placed in the hands of unbelieving children who are enemies to God, he is dishonored, for that which should be retained in the ranks of the Lord is placed in the enemy's ranks. Again, Brother T. has acted the part of a deceiver. He has used tobacco, but would have his brethren think that he did not use it. I saw that this sin has prevented his advancement in the divine life. He has a work to do, at his advanced age, to abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. He has loved the truth, and has suffered for the truth's sake. Now he should so estimate the eternal reward, the treasure in the heavens, the immortal inheritance, the crown of glory that is unfading, that he can cheerfully sacrifice the gratification of depraved appetite, let the consequence or suffering be ever so great, in order to accomplish the work of purification of the flesh and of the spirit. I was then shown his daughter-in-law. She is beloved of God, but held in servile bondage, fearing, trembling, desponding, doubting, and very nervous. This sister should not feel that she must yield her will to a godless youth who has less years upon his head than herself. She should remember that her marriage does not destroy her individuality. God has claims upon her higher than any earthly claim. Christ has bought her with his own blood. She is not her own. She fails to put her entire trust in God, and submits to yield her convictions, her conscience, to an overbearing, tyrannical man, fired up by Satan whenever his satanic majesty can work effectually through him to intimidate this trembling, shrinking soul. She has so many times been thrown into agitation that her nervous system is shattered, and she is merely a wreck. Is it the will of the Lord that this sister should be in this state, and God be robbed of her service? No. Her marriage was a deception of the devil. Yet now she should make the best of it, treat her husband with tenderness, and make him as happy as she can without violating her conscience. For if he remains in his rebellion, this world is all the heaven he will have. But to deprive herself of the privilege of meetings, to gratify an overbearing husband possessing the spirit of the dragon, is not according to God's will. He wants this trembling soul to flee to him. He will be a covert to her. He will be like the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Only have faith. Trust in God, and he will strengthen and bless. All three of her children are susceptible to the influences of the truth and spirit of God. Could these children be as favorably situated as our many Sabbath-keeping children, all would be converted and enlist in the army of the Lord. I was then shown a young girl of the same place who had departed from God and was enshrouded in darkness. Said the angel, "She did run well for a season. What did hinder her?" I was pointed back and saw that it was a change of surroundings. She was associating with youth like herself, who were filled with hilarity and glee, pride and love of the world. Had she regarded the words of Christ, she need not have yielded to the enemy. Watch ye and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. Temptation may be all around us, but this does not make it necessary that we should enter into temptation. The truth is worth everything. Its influence tends not to degrade, but to elevate, refine, purify, and exalt to immortality and the throne of God. Said the angel, "Will ye have Christ or the world?" Satan presents the world with its most alluring, flattering charms to poor mortals, and they gaze upon it, and its glitter and tinsel eclipse the glory of heaven and that life which is as enduring as the throne of God. A life of peace, happiness, joy unspeakable, which shall know nothing of sorrow, sadness, pain, nor death, is sacrificed for a short lifetime of sin. All who will turn from the pleasures of earth and with Moses choose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of the world, will, with faithful Moses, receive the unfading crown of immortality and the far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. The mother of this girl has at different times been susceptible to the influence of the truth, but she has soon lost the impression through indecision. She lacks decision of character, is too vacillating, and is affected too much by unbelievers. She must encourage decision, fortitude, steadiness of purpose, which will not be swerved to the right or left by circumstances. She must not be in a state of such vacillation. If she does not reform in this respect, she will be easily ensnared and taken captive by Satan at his will. She will have to possess perseverance and firmness in the work of overcoming, or she will be overcome and lose her soul. The work of salvation is not child's play, to be taken hold of at will and let alone at pleasure. It is the steady purpose, the untiring effort, that will gain the victory at last. It is he who endureth to the end that shall be saved. It is they who patiently continue in well-doing that shall have eternal life and the immortal reward. If this dear sister had been true to her convictions and had possessed steadiness of purpose, she might have exerted a saving influence in her family, over her husband, and she might have been of special help to her daughter. All who are engaged in this warfare with Satan and his host have a close work before them. They must not be as impressible as wax that the fire can melt into any form. They must endure hardness as faithful soldiers, stand at their post, and be true every time. God's Spirit is striving with this entire family. He will save them if they are willing to be saved in His appointed way. Now is the hour of probation. Now is the day of salvation. Now is God's time. In Christ's stead, we beseech them to become reconciled to God while they may, and in humility, with fear and trembling, work out their salvation. I was shown that it was the work of Satan to keep the church in a state of insensibility, that the youth may be secured in his own ranks. I saw that the youth were susceptible of the influence of the truth. If the parents would consecrate themselves to God and labor with interest for the conversion of their children, God would reveal himself to them and magnify his name among them. I was then shown the case of Brother Yu, that Satan had been fastening his bands about him and leading him away from God and his brethren. Brother V has had an influence to greatly darken this brother's understanding with his unbelief. I was pointed back and shown that the wisest course was not pursued in this brother's case. There was not sufficient reason why he should be left out of the church. He should have been encouraged, even urged, to unite with his brethren in church capacity. He was in a more fit state to come into the church than several who were united with it. He did not understand things clearly, and the enemy used this misunderstanding to his injury. God, who sees hearts, has been better pleased with the life and deportment of Brother Yu than with the lives of some who were united with the church. It is the Lord's will that he should come close to his brethren, that he may be a strength to them and they a strength to him. The wife of Brother Yu can be reached by the truth. In many respects, her deportment is not as questionable as that of some who profess to believe all the truth. Yet she must not look at the failures and wrongs of those who profess better things, but earnestly inquire, what is truth? She can exert an influence for good in connection with her companion. These souls, sanctified through the truth, can in the strength of God be pillars in the church and have a saving influence upon others. These dear souls are accountable to God for the influence they exert. They either gather with Christ or scatter abroad. God requires the weight of their influence in His cause on the side of truth. Jesus has bought them by His own blood. They are not their own, for they have been bought with a price. Therefore, the work is before them to glorify God in their bodies and spirits, which are His. We are doing work for eternity. It is of the highest importance that every hour be employed in the service of God, and thus to secure a treasure in heaven. I was shown your case, Brother V, in connection with the church at blank 2 years ago. The vision related to the past, present, and future. As we travel and I stand before the people in different places, the Spirit of the Lord brings before me clearly the cases I have been shown, reviving the matter previously given me. I was shown you as receiving the Sabbath, while you stood opposed to important truths connected with the Sabbath. You were not fortified with all the truth. I then saw your mind directed in the channel of unbelief, of doubt and distrust, and seeking to obtain those things which were calculated to strengthen unbelief and darkness. Instead of searching for evidence to strengthen faith, you took the opposite course, and Satan directed your mind in a course to suit his own purposes. You love to combat, and when you enter the field of battle, you know not when to lay down your arms. You love to argue, and have indulged in this until it has led you from the light, led you from the truth and from God, to where you have been enshrouded in darkness, and unbelief has taken possession of your mind. You have been blinded by Satan. Like faithless Thomas, you have considered it a virtue to doubt, unless you could have unmistakable evidence, removing from your mind all cause for doubt. Did Jesus commend the unbelieving Thomas while granting him the evidence which he declared he would have before he believed? Jesus said unto him, Be not faithless, but believing. Thomas answered, My Lord and my God. He is now compelled to believe. There is no room to doubt. Jesus then said, Thomas, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed. You were represented to me as uniting with the rebel leader and his host to annoy, perplex, dishearten, discourage, and overthrow those who are battling for the right, who are standing under the blood-stained banner of Prince Emmanuel. Your influence, I was shown, has turned souls from keeping the Sabbath of the fourth commandment. You have employed your talents and your skill to manufacture weapons to place in the hands of the enemies of God, to fight those who are trying to obey God in keeping his commandments, while angels have been commissioned to strengthen the things that remain, to withstand and counteract your influence. They have looked with the deepest grief upon your work to dishearten and destroy. You have caused pure, sinless, holy angels to weep. Those who are living amid the perils of the last days, days which are characterized by the masses turning from the truth of God to fables, will have close work to turn from the fables which are prepared for them on every hand, and have an appetite to feast upon unpopular truth. Those who turn from these fables to truth are despised, hated, and persecuted by those who are presenting fables to the people for their reception. Satan is at war with the remnant who are endeavoring to keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus. Evil angels are commissioned to employ men as their agents upon the earth. These can the most successfully exert an influence to make Satan's attacks effective against the remnant whom God calls a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. This Satan is determined to hinder. He will employ everyone who will engage in his service to hinder the chosen people of God from showing forth the praises of him who has called them out of darkness into his marvelous light, to hide, to cover up this light, to cause people to distrust it, to disbelieve it, is the work of the great rebel and his host. While Jesus is purifying his people unto himself, redeeming them from all iniquity, Satan will employ his forces to hinder the work and prevent the perfection of the saints. He does not exert his power upon those who are all covered up with deception and walled in by fables and error, and who make no effort to receive and obey the truth. He knows he is sure of them, but those who are seeking for truth, that they may obey it in the love of it, are the ones who excite his malice and stir his ire. He can never weaken them while they keep close to Jesus. Therefore, he is pleased when he can lead them in a course of disobedience. When we sin against God, there is a disposition to fall behind Jesus a day's journey. We seek to separate from his company because it is distasteful, for every ray of light from his divine presence points to the sin of which we have been guilty. Satan exults over the sins which he has induced souls to commit, and he makes the most of all these failures and sins. He rehearses them to the angels of God and taunts them with these weaknesses and failures. He is in every sense an accuser of the brethren, and exults over every sin and wrong which God's people are beguiled to commit. You, Brother V, have been engaged in this same work to quite an extent. You have taken what appeared to you like wrongs, weaknesses, and errors in the ranks of Sabbath-keeping Adventists, and have brought them to the notice of the enemies of our faith who were warring against that company unto whom angels of heaven were ministering, and whose cause Jesus, their advocate, was pleading before his Father. He cries, "Spare them, Father, spare them. They are the purchase of my blood," and lifts to his Father his wounded hands. You have been guilty before God of a great sin. You have been taking advantage of those things which grieve, which bring anguish upon the people of God as they see some of their numbers unconsecrated and frequently overcome by Satan. Instead of aiding these erring souls to get right, you have triumphantly made their errors conspicuous to those who hated them because they professed to keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. You have made it very hard for those who were engaged in the work of saving the erring, hunting up the lost sheep of the house of Israel. because of Israel's disobedience and departure from God, they were allowed to be brought into close places and to suffer adversity. Their enemies were permitted to make war with them, to humble them and lead them to seek God in their trouble and distress. Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. This took place immediately after the children of Israel had given themselves up to their rebellious murmurings and to unjust, unreasonable complaints against their leaders, whom God had qualified and appointed to lead them through the wilderness to the land of Canaan. The Lord directed their course, where there was no water, to prove them, to see if, after receiving so many evidences of His power, they had learned to turn to Him in their affliction, and had repented of their past rebellious murmurings against Him. They had charged Moses and Aaron with selfish motives in bringing them from Egypt to kill them and their children with hunger, that they might be enriched with their possessions. In doing this, the Israelites ascribed to man that which they had received unmistakable evidence was from God alone, whose power is unlimited. These wonderful manifestations of the power of God, He would have them ascribe to Him alone and magnify His name upon the earth. The Lord brought them over the same ground of trial repeatedly to prove whether they had learned His dealings and had repented of their sinful disobedience and rebellious murmurings. In Rephidim, when the people thirsted for water, they were again proud and showed that they still possessed an evil heart of unbelief, of murmuring, of rebellion, which revealed the fact that it would not yet be safe to establish them in the land of Canaan. If they would not glorify God in their trials and adversity, in their travels through the wilderness to the Canaan in prospect, while God was continually giving them unmistakable evidence of His power and glory and His care for them, they would not magnify His name and glorify Him when established in the land of Canaan, surrounded with blessings and prosperity. Because the people thirsted for water, they were provoked, so that Moses feared for his life. When Israel was assailed by the Amalekites, Moses gave Joshua directions to fight with their enemies while he would stand with the rod of God in his hand, with his hand raised toward heaven in the sight of the people, showing to rebellious, murmuring Israel that their strength and power was in God. He was their might and the source of their strength. There was no power in that rod. God wrought through Moses. Moses had to receive all his strength from above. When he held up his hands, Israel prevailed. When he let down his hands, Amalek prevailed. When Moses became weary, preparations were needful to keep his weary hands continually raised toward heaven. Aaron and Hur prepared a seat for Moses, and then both engaged in holding up his weary hands until the going down of the sun. These men thus showed to Israel their duty to sustain Moses in his arduous work while he should receive the word from God to speak to them. This act was also to show Israel that God alone held their destiny in His hands, that He was their acknowledged leader. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. For he said, Because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way, when ye were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way, and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about, in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Thou shalt not forget it." As the angel of God presented these facts in the travels and experiences of the children of Israel, I was deeply impressed with the especial regard of God for His people. Notwithstanding their errors, their disobedience, and their rebellion, they were still God's chosen people. He had especially honored them by coming down from His holy habitation upon Mount Sinai, and in majesty and glory and awful grandeur, speaking the Ten Commandments in the audience of all the people, and writing them with his own finger on the tables of stone. The Lord says of his people Israel, For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because ye were more in number than any people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers. I was shown that those who are trying to obey God and purify their souls through obedience to the truth are God's chosen people, his modern Israel. God says of them, through Peter, But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. As it was a crime for Amalek to take advantage of the children of Israel in their weakness and weariness, to annoy, perplex, and discourage them, so it was no small sin for you to be closely watching to discover the weakness, the haltings, the errors, and sins of God's afflicted people, and expose the same to their enemies. You were doing Satan's work, not the work of God. Many of the Sabbath-keeping Adventists in blank have been very weak. They have been miserable representatives of the truth. They have not been an honor to the cause of present truth, and the cause would have been better off without them. You have taken the unconsecrated lives of Sabbath keepers as an excuse for your occupying a position of doubt and unbelief. It has also strengthened your unbelief to see that some of these unconsecrated ones were professing strong faith in the visions, vindicating them when opposed, and defending them with warmth, while at the same time that they professed so much zeal, they were disregarding the teachings given through vision and were going directly contrary to them. In this respect, they were stumbling blocks to Brother Yu and were bringing the visions into disrepute by their course of action. Brother V, I was shown that you had a proud heart, and when you thought your writings were slighted at the review office, your pride was touched, and you commenced a warfare which has been like Saul's, kicking against the pricks. You have joined hands with those who turn the truth of God into a lie. You have strengthened the hands of sinners and opposed the counsel of God against your own soul. You have been warring against that of which you had no knowledge. You have not known what work you were doing. I saw your wife wrestling with God in prayer, her faith firmly grasping you and at the same time fixed upon the throne, pleading the never-failing promises of God. Her heart has ached as she has seen you persisting in your warfare against the truth. I was shown that you were doing this ignorantly, blinded by Satan. While engaged in this warfare, you were not increasing in spirituality and devotion to God. You had not the witness that your ways pleased God. You had a zeal, but not according to knowledge. You had no experience in my calling, had scarcely seen me, and had no knowledge of my work. Brother V, you possess qualifications which would make you of special service in the church at blank or in any other church, were your talents devoted to the upbuilding of the cause of God. I saw that your children were now in a state to be impressed with the truth, and Jesus was pleading for you. Brother V, spare him a little longer. I was shown that if you were converted to the truth, you would make a pillar in the church and could honor God by your influence, sanctified through the truth. I saw angels of mercy hovering about Brother V. I was shown that he was greatly deceived in the moral worth and standing before God of that class who have withdrawn from the body. A few honest ones are among them. These will be rescued, but the most of them have long been unconsecrated in heart, and the close testimonies have been in their way, a yoke of bondage to them. They have thrown off the yoke and retained their corrupt ways. God calls upon you to separate from them. Cut loose from these whose delight it is to war against the truth of God. A little from this, true character will be developed. They are of that class who love and make a lie. if your whole interest is in the truth and the preparatory work for this time, you will be sanctified through the truth and receive a fitness for immortality. You are in danger of being too exacting with your children and not as patient as is necessary. The thorough work of preparation must go on with all who profess the truth until we stand before the throne of God without fault, without a spot or wrinkle or any such thing. God will cleanse you if you will submit to the purifying process.